break through an invisible barrier that shouldn't even be here in the first place. I take a step away from the door and wait. After several painfully long seconds, she opens the door and makes brief eye contact with me as she steps aside to let me in. I pictured her on the drive over with her hair a mess, makeup smudged underneath her eyes from all the crying, and sporting three-day-old pajamas. The typical heartbroken attire for a girl who just lost all trust in the man she loves. I think I would rather she looked the way I pictured her than how she actually looks. She's dressed in her typical jeans, and her hair is neatly pulled back. There isn't a smudge of makeup on her face or a tear in her eyes. She gives me a faint smile as she closes the front door. I watch her closely because I'm not sure what to do. Of course, my first instinct is to pull her to me and kiss her, but my first instinct probably isn't the best. Instead, I wait until she goes into her living room. I follow her, wishing more than anything that she would turn toward me and throw her arms around me. She does turn to face me before she takes a seat, but she doesn't throw her arms around me. "Well," she signs, "how do we do this?" Her expression is hesitant and pained, but at least she's confronting it. I know this is hard for her. "How about we quit acting like we're not allowed to be ourselves?" I sigh. "This has been the hardest 3 days of my life, and I can't go another second without touching you." I don't give her a chance to respond before my arms are wrapped around her and I'm pulling her against me. She doesn't resist. Her arms wrap tightly around me, and as soon as my cheek is pressed against the top of her head, I feel her begin to cry. This is the Maggie I need. The vulnerable Maggie. The Maggie who still loves me, despite what I've put her through. I hug her and pull her to the couch, keeping her secured against me as I sit with her now on my lap. We continue to hold each other, neither of us knowing how to begin the conversation. I press a long kiss into her hair. What I wouldn't give to just be able to whisper all my apologies into her ear. I want her as close to me as possible while I tell her how sorry I am, but I can't do that and sign everything I need to say at the same time. I hate these moments in life where I'd give anything to be able to communicate the same way so many others take for granted. She slowly lifts her face, and I reluctantly let her pull back. She keeps her palms pressed against my chest and looks me directly in the eyes. "Are you in love with her?" she asks. She doesn't sign her question. She only speaks it. The fact that she doesn't sign it makes me think it was too hard for her to even ask. So hard that maybe she doesn't really want to know the answer, so she didn't really want me to understand her question. I did understand it. I grab both of her hands pressed against my chest, and I lift them, kissing each of her palms before releasing her hands to answer her. "I'm in love with you, Maggie." Her expression is tight and controlled. "That's not what I asked." I look away from her, not wanting her to see the struggle in my eyes. I close them and remind myself that lying won't get us back to where we need to be. Maggie's smart. She also deserves honesty, which isn't at all what I've been giving her. I open my eyes and look at her. I don't answer her with a yes or a no. I shrug because I honestly don't know if I'm in love with Sydney. How could I be when I'm in love with Maggie? It shouldn't be possible for the heart to love more than one person at once. She diverts her eyes away and scoots off my lap. She stands and slowly walks the length of the living room and back. She's thinking, so I give her a moment. I know my answer has hurt her, but I know a lie would have hurt her even more. She finally turns to me. "I can spend all night asking you really brutal questions, Ridge. I don't want to do that. I've had a lot of time to think this through, and I have a lot I need to say to you." "If brutal questions will help you, then ask me brutal questions, please. We've been together 5 years, and I can't let this tear us apart." She shakes her head, then takes a seat on the couch opposite me. "I don't need to ask the questions because I already know all the answers. I just need to talk to you now about where we go from here." I lean forward, not liking where this is going. I don't like it at all. "At least allow me to explain myself. You can't come to a decision about what happens to us without hearing me out first. She shakes her head again, and my heart clenches. I already know, Ridge. I know you. I know your heart. I've read your conversations with Sydney. I already know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me how much you love me, how you would do anything for me. You're going to apologize for developing feelings for another girl, despite how hard you tried to prevent that from happening. You're going to tell me you love me so much more than I know, and how your relationship with me is so much more important to you than your feelings for Sydney. You're going to tell me you'll do anything to make it up to me, and that I just need to give you a chance. You're probably going to be brutally honest with me also and tell me that you do have feelings for Sydney, but they don't compare to how you feel about me. She stands and moves to sit next to me on the couch. There are traces of tears in her eyes, but she isn't crying anymore. She faces me and begins signing again. And you know what, Ridge? I believe you. And I understand all of it, I do. I've read your conversations. It's as if I was right there, sifting through it all while the two of you were attempting to fight whatever was developing between you. I keep telling myself to quit logging back into your account, but I can't stop. I've read those conversations a million times. I deciphered every word, every sentence, every punctuation mark. I wanted to find the spot in your conversations that proved your disloyalty to me. I wanted to find the moment in your conversations where you became this despicable excuse for a man by admitting that what you felt for her was purely sexual. God, Ridge, I wanted to find that moment so bad, but I couldn't. I know you kissed her, but even the kiss seemed excusable after the two of you had that open discussion about it. I'm your girlfriend, and even I began to excuse it. I'm not saying what you did is readily forgivable by any means. You should have asked her to move out the second you felt compelled to kiss her. Hell, you shouldn't have ever asked her to move in if there was even the slightest possibility that you were attracted to her. What you did was wrong in every sense of the word, but what's so messed up is that I feel like I understand it. Maybe it's because I know you too well, but the fact that you're falling in love with Sydney is obvious, and I can't just sit back and share your heart with her, Ridge. I can't do it. No. I quickly pull her to me, wanting the comfort of her to subdue the panic building within me. She can be heartbroken. She can even be pissed or terrified. But the one thing I won't let her be is okay. She can't just be okay with this. Tears begin to sting my eyes as I hold her, as if my embrace is somehow supposed to convince her of how I feel. I'm shaking my head no, trying to get her not to take this conversation where I'm afraid it's headed. I press my lips against hers in an attempt to make it all go away. I hold her face in the palms of my hands and try desperately to show her how I feel, without having to pull apart from her again. Her lips part, and I kiss her. Something I've done on a regular basis for more than 5 years, but never with so much conviction or fear. Her mouth tastes of tears, and I'm not sure whose they are, because we're both crying now. She pushes against my chest, wanting to speak to me, but I don't want her to. I don't want to watch her tell me how okay my feelings for Sydney are. They're not okay. They shouldn't be okay at all. She sits up and pushes me away from her, and wipes her tears. I lean my elbow onto the couch and cover my mouth with my trembling hand. There's more. There's so much more I need to tell you. And I need you to give me the opportunity to get it out, okay? I simply nod, when all I want to do is tell her how hearing her out is the last thing my heart can take right now. She adjusts herself and pulls her legs onto the couch. She wraps her arms around them and rests her cheek on her knee, looking away from me. She's still and quiet and contemplating. I'm a complete wreck as I sit here and wait. She unwraps her hands from around her legs and slowly lifts her head to look me in the eyes. Remember the day we met? She asks. There's a faint smile in her eyes, and my panic eases slightly at the pleasantness in her memory. I nod. I noticed you first, before I noticed Warren. When Warren approached me, I was hoping he was approaching me for you. I remember making eye contact with you over his shoulder, because I wanted to smile at you so you would know that you caught my eye the same way I caught yours. But when I realized Warren wasn't approaching me for you, I was disappointed. There was something about you that tugged at me in a way that Warren didn't, but you didn't seem to have that same reaction to me. Warren was cute, so I agreed to go out with him, especially since I thought you weren't into me that day. I close my eyes and soak in her words for a moment. I never knew this. I'm not sure at this point that I want to know this. After several quiet moments, I reluctantly open my eyes again and let her finish. For the short time I dated Warren, you and I would have these brief conversations and moments of eye contact that always seemed to make you uncomfortable. And I knew it made you uncomfortable because you were developing feelings for me. But your loyalty to Warren was so strong that you wouldn't allow yourself to go there. I always admired that about you, because I knew the two of us would have worked so well. To be honest, I was secretly hoping you would betray his friendship and just kiss me or something, because you were all I thought about. I'm not even sure I was with Warren for Warren. I think I was with him for you all along. Then, a few weeks after Warren and I broke up, I began to think I'd never see you again, because you never came for me like I hoped you would. The thought of that terrified me, so I showed up at your apartment one day. You weren't there, but Brennan was. I think he knew why I was there, so he told me not to worry, that I just needed to give you time. He told me about the deal you and Warren made, and that you really did have feelings for me, but didn't feel right pursuing them yet. He even showed me the date you had circled on the calendar. I'll never forget how that made me feel, and from that point on, I counted down the days until you showed up at my front door. She wipes away a tear. I briefly close my eyes and try to show her respect by not allowing myself to pull her to me again. But it's so hard. I never knew she came for me. Brennan never told me, and right now I'm struggling with wanting to let him know how pissed I am that he kept quiet, and how much I love him for informing Maggie of how I felt. I fell in love with you during that year of waiting for you. I fell in love with your loyalty to Warren. I fell in love with your loyalty to me. I fell in love with your patience and your willpower. I fell in love with the fact that you didn't want to start things out wrong with us. You wanted everything to be as right as it could be, so you waited an entire year. Believe me, Ridge, I know how hard it was, because I was waiting right along with you. I lift my hand and wipe a tear from her cheek, then let her finish. I swore I wouldn't allow my illness to interfere with us. I wouldn't let it prevent me from completely falling in love with you. I wouldn't let it be my crutch to push you away. You were so adamant that it didn't matter to you, and I was so desperate to believe you. We were both lying to ourselves. I think my illness is the thing you love the most about me. My breath catches in my throat. Those words hurt me more than any words ever have. Why would you say something like that, Maggie? I know it sounds absurd to you because you don't see it that way. It's who you are. You're loyal. You love people to a fault. You want to take care of everyone around you, including me, Brennan, Warren, Sydney. It's just who you are. And seeing how Warren treated me back then made you want to jump in and become my hero. I'm not saying you don't love me for me, because I know you do. I just think you love me the wrong way. I run my palm over my forehead and try to squeeze the pain away. My head can't take another second of listening to how incredibly wrong she is. Maggie, stop. If you're about to use your illness as an excuse to leave me, I won't listen to it. I can't. You're talking like you're about to just give up on us, and it's scaring the living hell out of me. I didn't come here for you to give up. I need you to fight with me. I need you to fight for us. She tilts her head to the side, slowly shaking it in disagreement. I shouldn't have to fight for us, Ridge. I fight every goddamn day of my life just to survive. I should be able to revel in us, but I can't. I'm constantly living in fear that I'm going to upset you or make you angry because you want so badly to form a protective bubble around me. You don't want me taking risks or doing anything that causes me one iota of stress. You don't see the point in my going to college since we both know my fate. You don't see the point in me having a career because you think it's better if I just let you take care of me while I take it easy. You don't understand my yearning to experience the things that give people that rush of adrenaline. You get mad when I bring up the idea of traveling because you don't think it's safe for my health. You refuse to go on tour with your brother because you want to be the one to take care of me when I get sick. You give up so much of your life to make sure I'm not having to give up any of mine. And sometimes it's so suffocating. Suffocating? I'm suffocating? I stand up and pace the room for several moments, attempting to breathe the air back into my lungs that she's repeatedly knocking out. After I'm calm enough to respond, I return to the couch and face her again. I'm not trying to suffocate you, Maggie. I just want to protect you. We don't have the luxury of time like every other couple. Is it wrong that I want to prolong what we have for as long as we possibly can? No, Ridge, it's not wrong. I love that about you so much, but I don't love it for me. It always feels as though you're trying to be my lifeguard. I don't need a lifeguard, Ridge. I need someone who is willing to watch me brave the ocean and then dare me not to drown. But you wouldn't be able to let me near the ocean. It's not your fault that you can't give me that. I know it's just an analogy, but she's only using it to make excuses. You think that's what you want, I sigh. It's not. You can't tell me you'd rather be with someone who would allow you to risk the time you have left than have someone who would do whatever he could to prolong his life with you. She exhales. I can't tell if she's admitting I'm right or if she's frustrated because I'm wrong. She looks me square in the eyes and leans forward, then briefly presses her lips to mine. As soon as I lift my hands to her face, she pulls back again. I've known all my life that I could die at any moment. You don't know what that's like, Ridge, but I want you to try to put yourself in my shoes. If you knew all your life that you were going to die at any moment, would you be okay with just barely living? Or would you live as hard as you could? Because you're needing me to barely live, Ridge. I can't do that. When I die, I need to know that I did everything I've ever wanted to do, and I've seen everything I've ever wanted to see, and I've loved everyone I've ever wanted to love. I can't just barely live anymore. And it's not in your nature to stick by my side and watch me do all the things I still have left to do in my life. You've spent 5 years of your life loving me like no one's ever loved me. My love has matched yours minute for minute. I don't want you to ever doubt that. People take so much for granted, and I never want you to feel that I took you for granted. Everything you do for me is so much more than I deserve, and you need to know how much that means to me. But there are times when I feel like our devotion to each other is tying us down, keeping us both from really living. The past few days have helped me realize that I'm still with you because I'm scared to break your heart. But if I don't find the courage to do it, I'm scared I'll just keep holding you back. Holding myself back. I feel like I can't live the life I want to live for fear of hurting you, and you can't live the life you want to live because your heart is too loyal for your own good. As much as it hurts me to admit this, I think I might be better off without you. I also think that maybe someday you'll realize you're better off without me. My elbows meet my knees as I lean forward and turn away from her. I can't watch her say another word to me. Every single thing she's saying is not only breaking my heart, but it feels as if it's also breaking the heart within my heart. It hurts so much. And I'm so damn scared because for a moment I begin to think there's a possibility that she's right. Maybe she doesn't need me. Maybe I do hold her back. Maybe I'm not the hero to her I've always tried so hard to be because right now I feel as if she doesn't even need a hero. Why would she? She has someone so much stronger than I'll ever be for her. She has herself. The realization that I may not be what she needs in her life consumes me, and my regret and guilt and shame fold in on themselves, completely devouring the strength I have left. I feel her arms wrap around me, and I pull her to me, needing to feel her against me. I love her so damn much, and all I want right now is for her to know that, even if it doesn't change anything. I pull her to me and press my forehead to hers as we both cry, holding on to each other with all we have left. Tears are streaming down her cheeks as she slides into my lap. She mouths, "I love you," then presses her lips to mine. I pull her against my chest as close as I possibly can without crawling inside of her, which is exactly what my heart is trying to do. It wants to embed itself within the walls of her chest, and it never wants to let go.
Chapter 22. Sydney. My cable won't be connected until next week. My eyes hurt from reading too much and maybe also from crying. I finally put a down payment on a car with my leftover student loans, but until I get a job, I can't really afford the gas. I'd better find a job soon because I'm pretty sure I've fictionalized how great living alone is. I'm tempted to try to get my job back at the library, even if I have to beg. I just need something to keep me busy. I'm freaking bored. So bored that I'm looking at my hands counting random things that make absolutely no sense to even be counting. 1. The number of people constantly on my mind. Rich. 2. The number of people I wish would contract a sexually transmitted disease. Hunter and Tori. 3. The number of months since I broke up with my lying, cheating bastard of a boyfriend. 4. The number of times Warren has checked up on me since I moved out of the apartment. 5. The number of times Warren has knocked on my door in the last 30 seconds. 6. The number of days since I last saw Ridge. 7. The number of feet from my couch to the front door. I open the door, and Warren doesn't even wait for me to invite him in. He smiles and slips past me, holding 2 white bags in his hands. "I brought tacos," he says. "I was driving by on my way home from work and thought you might want some." He sets the bags on my kitchen counter, then walks to the sofa and plops down. I close the door and face him. "Thanks for the tacos, but how do I know you aren't pranking me? Would you do switch the beef out with tobacco?" Warren looks up at me and grins, impressed. "Now that's a genius prank idea, Sydney. I think you might finally be getting the hang of it." I laugh and take a seat next to him. Figures, now that I have no roommates to prank. He laughs and pats my knee. "Bridget doesn't get off work until midnight. Wanna go catch a movie?" My head sinks into the back of the couch almost as quickly as my heart sinks into my stomach. I hate feeling as if he's only here because he feels sorry for me. The last thing I want to be is someone's worry. "Warren, you don't have to keep coming by here to check on me every day. I know you're trying to be nice, but I'm fine." He shifts his weight on the couch so that he's facing me. "I'm not coming by here because I feel sorry for you, Sydney. You're my friend. I miss having you around the apartment. And I might be coming by here because I feel a tad bit remorseful for treating you like complete shit the night Maggie was admitted to the hospital." I nod. "Yeah, you were quite the asshole that night." "I know," he laughs. "Don't worry, Ridge hasn't let me forget it." Ridge. God, even hearing his name hurts. Warren realizes his slip-up when he sees the change in my expression. "Shit, sorry." I press my palms into the couch and stand up, wanting to escape the awkwardness of our conversation. It's really not a subject I need to be talking about anyway. "Well, are you hungry?" I ask as I head to the kitchen. "I just spent hours slaving over the stove to make these tacos, so you'd better eat one." Warren laughs, walks into the kitchen with me, and takes one of the tacos. I unwrap one and lean against the bar, but before I even bring it to my mouth, I become too nauseated to eat. In all honesty, I haven't slept or eaten very much in the 6 days since I moved out. I hate knowing that I had a part in causing so much hurt in another person. Maggie didn't do anything to deserve how we made her feel. It's also hard as hell not knowing how things have turned out between the two of them. I haven't asked Warren about it for obvious reasons, because whatever the outcome, it wouldn't change things. But now it feels as if I have this huge gaping hole in my chest from the constant curiosity. As much as I've wished for the last 3 months that Ridge didn't have a girlfriend, it's nothing compared to how much I've hoped she could forgive him.
Penny, for your thoughts.
I glance up at Warren, who's leaning against the counter watching me think. I shrug my shoulders and set my uneaten food aside, then hug myself and stare down at my feet, afraid that if I look directly at him, he'll know what I'm thinking. Look, he says, dipping his head to try to get me to look him in the eye. I know you haven't asked about him because you know as well as I do how much you need to move on. But if you have questions, I'll answer them, Sydney. I'll answer them because you're my friend, and that's what friends do. My chest rises with my deep intake of breath, and before I can fully release it, the question spills from my mouth. How is he? Warren clenches his jaw, which makes me think he wishes he hadn't given me the opening to ask about Ridge. He's okay. He'll be okay. I nod, but instantly have a million follow-up questions to ask. Did she take him back? Has he asked about me? Does he seem happy? Do you think he regrets me now? I decide to take it one question at a time, because I'm not even sure his answers will be good for me at this point. I swallow nervously, then look up at him. Did she forgive him? Warren is the one who can't hold the eye contact now. He straightens up, turns around with his back to me, and places his palms flat on the counter. His head hangs between his shoulders as he sighs uncomfortably. I'm not sure if I should be telling you this. He pauses for a moment, then turns back around to face me. She did forgive him. From what he told me, she understood the situation between you and Ridge. I'm not saying she wasn't upset about it at all, but she did forgive him. His answer completely slays me. I slap my hand over my mouth to muffle my cry, and then I turn away from Warren. I'm confused by my reaction and confused by my heart. I'm immediately consumed with relief to know that she forgave him, but the relief washes away with grief at the realization that she forgave him. I don't even know how to feel. I'm relieved for Ridge and grieving for myself. Warren sighs heavily, and I feel awful for allowing him to see me react this way. I shouldn't have asked. Damn it, why did I ask? I wasn't finished, Sydney, he says quietly. I shake my head and keep facing the opposite direction while he gets out the rest of what he wants to say. She forgave him for what happened with you, but what happened with you was also an eye-opener about why they were even together in the first place. It turns out she couldn't find a good enough reason to take him back. Ridge said she's got a lot of life left to live, but she can't live it to the fullest when he's constantly trying to hold her back. I bring both hands to my face, completely perplexed by my heart now. Just seconds ago, I was grieving because she forgave him, and now I'm grieving because she didn't. Just 3 months ago, I was sitting outside on my suitcases in the rain, believing I was experiencing what it felt like to be heartbroken. God, I was wrong. So damn wrong. This is heartbroken. This, right now. Warren's arms wrap around me, and he pulls me to him. I know he doesn't want to see me upset, and I'm really trying my best not to appear that way. Crying about it won't help anyway. It hasn't helped for the past 6 days I've been doing it. I pull away from Warren and walk to the counter where I tear off a paper towel. I wad it up and wipe my eyes with it. I hate feelings, I say as I sniffle back more tears. Warren laughs and nods in agreement. Why do you think I chose to be with a girl who has none? The Bridget diss makes me laugh. I do my best to suck it up and wipe away the rest of my tears, because, as I told myself before, the outcome of Ridge and Maggie doesn't matter to my situation. No matter how things turn out between them, it still doesn't mean anything for Ridge and me. Things are entirely too complicated between us, and nothing but space and time can change that. I'll go watch a movie with you, I say to Warren, but it better not be a porn.
Ridge. Give me my damn keys, Ridge, Warren signs. I calmly shake my head for the third time in 5 minutes. I'll give you the keys when you tell me where she lives. He glares at me hard, still refusing to budge. I've had his keys for most of the day now, and I'll be damned if I'll give them back before he gives me the information I need. I know it's only been 3 weeks since Maggie broke up with me, but I haven't been able to stop thinking about how everything I've done to Sydney has affected her. I need to know if she's okay. I've gone this long without contacting her simply because I'm not sure what I'll say when I eventually do see her. All I know is that I need to see her, or I'll more than likely never sleep again. It's been more than 3 weeks since the last time I had a full night's sleep, and my mind just needs reassurance. Warren sits across from me at the table, and I return my attention to the computer in front of me. Despite the fact that I want to blame my entire past few weeks on computers, I know that it was all my fault. So I sucked it up and bought a new one. I still have to rely on a computer for income, unfortunately. Warren reaches across the table and slams my laptop shut, forcing me to look up at him. Nothing good will come of it, he signs. It's only been 3 weeks since you and Maggie ended things. I'm not giving you Sydney's address because you don't need to see her. Now give me my keys or I'm taking your car. I grin smugly. Good luck finding my keys. They're in the same spot I hid yours. He shakes his head in frustration. Why are you being such a dick, Ridge? She's finally on her own and making a life for herself and doing well, and you want to barge in and confuse her all over again? How do you know she's doing well? Do you talk to her? The desperation in my question surprises me because I didn't know until this second just how much I need her to be okay. Yeah, I've seen her a few times. Bridget and I had lunch with her yesterday. I fall back against my chair, slightly annoyed that he didn't tell me this, but relieved to know she's not holed up in her apartment, devastated. Has she asked about me? Does she know about Maggie and me? He nods. She knows. She asked how things went with the two of you, so I told her the truth. She hasn't brought it up since then. Jesus Christ. Knowing that she knows the truth should relieve my worry, but it only intensifies it. I can't imagine what she must think about my lack of communication with her now that she knows about Maggie. The fact that I haven't contacted her at all probably has her believing I blame her. I lean forward and look pleadingly to Warren. Please, Warren, tell me where she lives. He shakes his head. Give me my keys. I shake my head. He rolls his eyes at our matched stubbornness and pushes himself away from the table, then storms off to his room. I open my texts to Sydney and begin scrolling through them as I do every single day, wishing I had the courage to text her. I'm afraid it will be easier for her to shut me out through a text than it would be if I were to show up at her front door. Which is why I haven't texted her. Despite the fact that I don't want to agree with Warren, I know that nothing good will come from my contacting her. I know we're not in a place to start a relationship, and seeing her in person would only exacerbate how much I miss her. However, knowing what I should do and abiding by what I should do are two completely different things. My light flicks on. Seconds later, my shoulders are being violently shaken. I smile through the grogginess, knowing by Warren's presence alone that I've got him right where I want him. I turn over and look up at him. Something wrong? I sign. Where are they? Where are what? My condoms, Ridge, where the hell did you hide my condoms? I knew that if stealing his keys didn't work, then stealing his condoms would. I'm just glad he thought to put on shorts before leaving Bridget in his bed and storming into my room. You want your condoms? I sign. Tell me where she lives. Warren runs his palms over his face, and from the looks of it, I think he's groaning. Forget it. I'll go to the store and buy new ones. Before he turns to walk out of my room, I sit up on the bed. How do you plan on driving to the store? I have your keys, remember? He pauses for a second, and then his face relaxes when he's hit with a new epiphany. I'll take Bridget's car. Good luck finding her keys. Warren stares at me hard for several seconds, and finally slumps his shoulders and turns toward my dresser. He grabs a pen and paper and writes something down, wads it up, and throws it at me. Here's her address, asshole. Now give me my keys. I unfold the paper and double-check to make sure he actually wrote an address down. I reach behind my nightstand and grab his box of condoms and toss it to him. That should do you for now. I'll tell you where your keys are after I confirm that this is really her address. Warren pulls one of the condoms out of the box and tosses it at me. Take this with you when you go, because that's definitely her address. He turns and leaves the room, and no sooner is he gone than I'm up and dressed and heading out the front door. I don't even know what time it is. I don't even care.
Chapter 23. Sydney. Sound triggers. They happen a lot, but mostly when I hear certain songs, especially songs Hunter and I both loved. If I listen to a song during a particularly depressing period, then hear it later on down the road, it brings back all the old feelings associated with that song. There are songs I used to love that now I absolutely refuse to listen to. They trigger memories and feelings I don't want to experience again. My text tone has become one of those sound triggers. Namely, Ridge's text tone. It's very distinct, a snippet from the demo of our song, Maybe Someday. I assigned it to him after I heard the song for the first time. I'd like to say that sound trigger is a negative one, but I'm not so sure it is. The kiss I experienced with him during the song certainly led to negative feelings of guilt, but the kiss itself still turns my heart into a hot mess just thinking about it. And I think about it a lot. Way more than I should. In fact, I'm thinking about it right now, as the snippet of our song pours from the speakers of my cell phone, indicating that I'm receiving a text. From Ridge. I honestly never expected to hear that sound again. I roll over on my bed and stretch my arm to the nightstand, my now trembling fingers grasping at my phone. Knowing that I've received a text from him has once again wreaked havoc with my organs, and they've forgotten how to function properly. I pull the phone to my chest and close my eyes, too nervous to read his words. Beat, beat, pause. Contract, expand. Inhale, exhale. I slowly open my eyes and hold up the phone, then unlock the screen. Ridge, are you home? Am I home? Why would he care if I were home? He doesn't even know where I live. Besides, he made it pretty clear where his heart's loyalty resided when he told me to move out 3 weeks ago. But I am home, and despite my better judgment, I want him to know I'm home. I'm tempted to respond with my address and tell him to come find out for himself whether or not I'm home. Instead, I go with something safer, something less telling. Me. Yes. I pull the covers off and sit up on the edge of the bed, watching my phone, too afraid even to blink. Ridge, you're not answering the door. Am I at the wrong apartment? Oh, God. I hope he's at the wrong apartment. Or maybe I hope he's at the right apartment. I can't really tell because I'm happy he's here, but I'm pissed off that he's here. These conflicting feelings are exhausting. I stand and run out of my bedroom, straight to my front door. I peer through the peephole, and sure enough, he's at my front door. Me. You're outside my door, so, yeah, right apartment. I look out the peephole again after hitting send, and he's standing with his palm flat against the door, staring at his phone. Seeing the pained expression on his face, and knowing it derives from the battle his heart is going through makes me want to swing open the door and throw my arms around him. I close my eyes and press my forehead to the door in order to give myself time to think before making any rash decisions. My heart is being pulled toward him, and I can't think of anything I want more right now than to open this door. However, I also know that opening the door won't do either of us any good. He just broke up with Maggie a matter of weeks ago, so if he's here for me, he can turn right around and leave. There's no way anything could work between us when I know he's still heartbroken over someone else. I deserve more than what he can give me right now. I've been through too much this year to let someone screw with my heart like this. He shouldn't be here. Ridge, can I come in? I turn until my back is pressed against the door. I clutch the phone to my chest and squeeze my eyes shut. I don't want to read his words. I don't want to see his face. Everything about him makes me lose sight of what's important, what's best for me. He isn't what's best for my life right now, especially considering what he's gone through in his own life, and I should walk away from this door and not let him in. But everything in me wants to let him in. Please, Sydney. The words are almost an inaudible whisper through the other side of the door, but I definitely heard them. Every single part of me heard them. The desperation in his voice, combined with the simple fact that he spoke, completely slays me. I allow my heart to make my decision for me this time, as I slowly face the door. I turn the lock and slide the latch loose, then open the door. I can't describe what it feels like to see him standing in front of me again without using the term terrifying. Everything about the way he makes me feel is absolutely terrifying. The way my heart wants to be held by him is terrifying. The way my knees seem to forget how to hold me up is terrifying. The way my mouth wants to be claimed by his is terrifying. I do my best to hide what his presence does to me by turning away from him and walking toward the living room. I don't know why I'm trying to hide my reaction from him, but isn't that what people do? We try so hard to hide everything we're really feeling from those who probably need to know our true feelings the most. People try to bottle up their emotions, as if it's somehow wrong to have natural reactions to life. My natural reaction in this moment is to turn and hug him, regardless of the reason he's here. My arms want to be around him, my face wants to be pressed against his chest, my back wants to be cradled by him. Yet I'm standing here trying to pretend that's the last thing I need from him. Why? I inhale a calming breath, then turn around when I hear him close the front door behind him. I lift my eyes to meet his, and he's standing several feet in front of me, watching me. I can tell by the tightness in his expression that he's doing exactly what I'm doing. He's holding back everything he's feeling, for the sake of what? Pride? Fear? The one thing I've always admired about my relationship with Ridge is that we're so honest and real with each other. I've always been able to say exactly what I was thinking, and so has he. I don't like this shift we've made. I try to smile at him, but I'm not sure if my smile is working right now. I speak to him and enunciate clearly so he can read my lips. Are you here because you need a flaw? He laughs and exhales at the same time, relieved that I'm not angry. I'm not angry. I've never been mad at him. The decisions he's made during the time he's known me aren't decisions I can hold against him. The only thing I hold against him is the night he kissed me and ruined me for every other kiss I'll ever experience. I take a seat on the couch and look up at him. Are you okay? I ask. He sighs and I quickly look away. It's hard enough being in the same room as him right now, but even harder to make eye contact with him. He completes the walk into the living room and sits on the couch next to me. I debated buying more furniture, but one couch was all I could afford, a love seat at that. I'm not so sure I'm sad about my lack of furniture, though, because his leg is touching my thigh, and the simple contact causes heat to roll through me like a riptide. I look down at our knees when they brush together and realize I'm still wearing the t-shirt I threw on right before I went to bed. I guess I was so shocked by the fact that he said he was at my apartment door that I didn't concern myself with how I looked. I'm in nothing but an oversized cotton t-shirt that falls to my knees, and my hair is more than likely a wreck. He's in jeans and a gray Sounds of Cedar t-shirt. I would say I feel underdressed, but I'm actually dressed appropriately for what I was doing before he showed up, which was going to bed. Ridge, I don't know if I'm okay. Are you okay? I forgot I even asked him a question for a second. I shrug. I'm sure I will be fine, but I'm not going to lie and tell him I am. I think it's obvious that neither one of us can really be okay with how everything has turned out. I'm not okay with losing Ridge, and Ridge isn't okay with losing Maggie. Me. I'm sorry about Maggie. I feel awful. She'll come around, though. 5 years is a lot to give up for a misunderstanding. I hit send and finally look up at him. He reads the text, then eyes me. The concentration in his expression makes the breath catch in my lungs. Ridge. It wasn't a misunderstanding, Sydney. She understood a little too well. I read his text several times, wishing he would expand on it. What wasn't a misunderstanding? The reason they broke up? His feelings for me? Rather than ask him what he means, I cut to the question I want the answer to the most. Me, why are you here? He works his jaw back and forth before responding. Ridge, do you want me to leave? I look at him and slowly shake my head no. Then I pause and shake my head yes. Then I pause again and just shrug. He smiles endearingly, completely understanding my confusion. Me, I guess whether or not I want you here depends on why you're here. Are you here because you need me to try to help you win back Maggie? Are you here because you miss me? Are you here because you want to try to work out some sort of friendship? Ridge, would I be wrong if I answered none of the above? I don't know why I'm here. Part of me misses you so much it hurts, while part of me wishes I never even met you to begin with. I guess today is one of the days I was hurting, so I stole Warren's keys and forced him to give me your address. I didn't think this through or come up with any kind of speech. I just did what my heart needed me to do, which was to see you. His brutally honest reply melts my heart and pisses me off all at the same time. Me, what about tomorrow? What if tomorrow is one of the days you wished you never met me? What am I supposed to do then? The intensity in his stare is unnerving. Maybe he's trying to gauge if that was an angry response. I'm not sure if it was or not. I'm not sure how I feel about the fact that he doesn't even know why he's here. He doesn't respond to my text, and it proves one thing. He's having the same internal conflict with himself that I've been having. He wants to be with me, but he doesn't. He wants to love me, but he doesn't know if he should. He wants to see me, but he knows he shouldn't. He wants to kiss me, but it would hurt just as much as it did the first time he kissed me and had to walk away. I suddenly feel uncomfortable staring at him. We're way too close together on this couch, yet my body is making it very clear to me that it doesn't think we're close enough at all. What it's wishing would happen right now are all the things that aren't. Ridge looks away and slowly scans my apartment for a few moments, then returns his attention to his phone. Ridge, I like your place. Good neighborhood. Seems safe. I almost laugh at his text and the casual conversation he's trying to make, because I know we're no longer in a place for casual conversation. We can't be friends at this point. We also can't be together with so much against us. Casual conversation has no place between us right now. Yet I can't bring myself to reply any differently. Me. I like it here. Thank you for helping me out with the hotel until I could move in. Ridge.
It was the least I could do. Absolutely. The least I could do.
Me. I'll pay you back as soon as I get my first paycheck. I got my job back at the campus library, so it should only be another week.
Ridge. Sydney, stop. I don't even want you to offer.
I have no idea what to say in response. This whole situation is awkward and uncomfortable because we're both dancing around all the things we wish we had the courage to do and say. I set my phone face down on the couch. I want him to know that I need a break. I don't like that we aren't being us. He takes the hint and lays his phone down on the armrest beside him, then sighs heavily as he drops his head against the back of the couch. The silence makes me wish I could experience the world from his perspective for once. I find it almost impossible to put myself in his shoes, though. People with the advantage of hearing take so much for granted, and I've never understood that to the extent that I understand it now. There's nothing being spoken between us, yet I understand by his heavy sigh that he's frustrated with himself. I understand how much he's holding back by the way his breaths are being sharply pulled in. I suppose his expertise in a silent world gives him an ability to read people, just in different ways. Instead of focusing on the sounds of my breath, he focuses on the rise and fall of my chest. Rather than listening to quiet sighs, he more than likely watches my eyes, my hands, my posture. Maybe that's why his face is tilted toward mine now, because he wants to see me and get a feel for what's going through my head. I feel as if he reads me too well. The way he's watching me forces me to try to control every facial expression and every breath. I close my eyes and lean my head back, knowing he's staring, trying to get a sense of where I am. I also wish I could just turn to him and tell him. I want to tell him how much I've missed him. I want to tell him how much he means to me. I want to tell him how horrible I feel, because before I showed up in his life, everything seemed perfect for him. I want to tell him that even though we both regretted it, that minute we spent kissing was the 1 minute out of my entire life that I wouldn't trade for the world. At moments like these, I'm thankful he can't hear me, or there would have been so many things spoken that I would regret. Instead, there are so many things left unsaid that I wish I had the courage to say. Ridge's weight shifts on the couch, and my eyes naturally open out of curiosity. He's leaning across the arm of the couch, reaching for something. When he turns back around, he's holding a pen in his hand. He smiles softly, then picks up my arm. He turns his body toward mine and presses the pen to my open palm. I swallow hard and slowly look up at his face, but he's looking down at my hand as he writes. I could swear I almost see a faint smile flash across his lips. When he's finished, he brings my palm to his mouth and blows softly to dry the ink. His lips are moist and puckered into a pout, and holy hell, it just got really warm in this apartment. He lowers my hand, and I look down at it. Just wanted to touch your hand. I laugh softly, mostly because his words are so innocent and sweet compared to the things he's written on me in the past. I've been sitting here on this couch with him for 10 minutes, wishing he would touch me,
and then he goes and admits he was thinking the exact same thing. It's so juvenile, as if we're teenagers. I'm almost embarrassed that it pleases me this much that he's touching me, but I can't recall a time I've ever wanted anything more. He hasn't released my hand yet, and I'm still looking down at his writing, smiling. I brush my thumb across the back of his hand, and he gasps quietly. The permission I just gave him with that tiny movement seems to have broken some invisible barrier, because he immediately slides his hand over mine and presses our palms together, then intertwines our fingers. The warmth of his hand doesn't come close to the warmth that just shot through my entire body. God, if just holding hands with him feels this intense, I can't imagine what everything else with him would feel like. We're both watching our hands now, feeling every bit of the connection pulsating through our palms. He brushes over my thumb and flips our hands over, then takes the pen and presses it to my wrist. He moves the pen slowly up my wrist, drawing in a straight line all the way up my forearm. I don't stop him. I simply watch him. When he reaches the crease in my elbow, he begins to write again. I read each word as he writes it. Just an excuse to touch you here, too. Without releasing my hand, he lifts my arm and keeps his eyes focused on mine as he bends forward and blows softly up and down my arm. He presses his lips lightly against his words and kisses them without once breaking eye contact. When his lips meet my arm, I feel a soft flick of his tongue tease my arm for a split second before his mouth closes over my skin. That might have just made me whimper. Yep, pretty sure I just whimpered. God, I'm so glad he couldn't hear that. He pulls his lips away from my arm and continues to watch me, gauging my reaction. His eyes are dark and piercing, and they're focused all over me, on my lips, on my eyes, on my neck, on my hair, on my chest. He can't seem to take me in fast enough. He presses the pen against my skin again, starting where he left off. He rolls the pen slowly up my arm, watching it intently the whole time. When he reaches the sleeve of my t-shirt, he pushes it up carefully until my shoulder is exposed. He makes a small mark with the pen, then slowly leans over me. My head falls back against the couch when I feel his lips meet my skin. His breath is close and warm against my shoulder. I'm not even thinking about the fact that he's drawing all over me. That can be washed off later. Right now, I just want his pen to keep going and going until it's completely out of ink. He pulls away and releases my hand, switching the pen to his other hand. He pulls my sleeve back down over my shoulder, then slips his fingers inside the collar of my t-shirt, tugging it to expose more of my collarbone. He puts the tip of the pen on my shoulder and glances up at me while he proceeds with caution, making his way to my neck. His expression is heated, and I can tell he's proceeding with caution despite the fact that I know exactly what he wishes were happening right now and where he plans to go with this pen. He doesn't have to verbalize it when his eyes clearly state it for him. He moves the pen slowly up my neck. I naturally tilt my head to the side, and as soon as I do, I hear a rush of air hiss quietly through his teeth. He comes to a stop just below my ear. I squeeze my eyes shut and hope my heart doesn't explode when he leans in, because it definitely feels as if it could. His lips press gently against my skin, and I swear the room flips upside down. Or maybe that was just my heart. One of my hands slides up his arm and grasps the back of his head, not wanting him to pull away from this spot. His tongue makes another quick appearance against my neck, but he doesn't let my desperation stall him. He lifts away and looks back down at me. His eyes are smiling, knowing how crazy he's driving me. He rolls the pen from the spot below my ear, back down my neck, and around to the dip in the base of my throat, before kissing the spot.